Good morning. So last time with our substitute, we went over AVL trees, which, as you probably have figured out, are the subject of this week's lab. It's one of the subjects. And probably the most sort of confusing part of AVL trees is that we have this balance rule, but how do we maintain it? That we know it's balanced because we're going to track this balance factor that's not going to be more than plus or minus 2, which means that the two sides of the tree, when we look anywhere, are basically the same size. But to maintain that, we need to do these rotations. We need to reorganize the nodes of the tree without messing up our binary search tree properties. And we need to choose these rotations so they'll actually make our balance factor go back to its constraint, which for AVL trees is plus or minus 1 or 0. That's the allowed misbalance. So you talked about sort of arguably four different kinds of rotations. So we had our left and our right, which are just mirrors of each other. And we had another two mirrored pairs, which were these double rotations, which one way you could look at them is that you do one kind of rotation on a subtree and then you rotate the main tree. Another way you can look at them is you can just draw the diagram and say, this goes here, this ends up here, this ends up here, so on. And my recommendation, if you're implementing it, is to take out the picture of what it looks like, get pointers to everything named in the diagram, and just connect the links like the outcome side of the picture. And we also talk about how you choose the choice of rotation on insertion. And the rule we had for AVL trees is you look at the lowest imbalanced node. So furthest down the tree, which node did we mess up the AVL property? That the balance factor should not be worse than plus or minus 1. And the direction of insertion below that node. And from those two properties, you could figure out which kind of rotation you need. And I hear you also briefly started on red-black trees, and that's where we'll pick up today. But first, I'll take any questions about AVL trees from and all these rotation operations from last time. Okay. So red-black trees. So let's go through the properties for red-black trees. So red-black trees, we're not going to track a balance factor. So AVL trees, we introduced them to you first because they have probably the most straightforward way of figuring out whether our tree is balanced or not. With red-black trees, we're going to do something which is a lot more indirect. So we're going to track some information, and I'm going to show you in a bit that this information guarantees that our tree remains balanced. But our notion of balanced is going to be a lot looser than with AVL trees. So to do this, to track whether nodes are balanced, we're going to have each node be marked as red or black. And to make my definition simpler, not because we usually consider this the case, we're going to consider null leaves at the bottom of the tree. So anytime where we have null pointers, we'll consider those null pointers to actually be a leaf, and we'll say that those null pointers are always colored black. That's just going to be our rule. And we're going to have rules about when nodes are red or black, and this is going to guarantee some maximum depth on either side of the tree, and therefore give us our balanced property. So our rules. So our first rule is the root is always black. Our second rule is leaves are always black. This includes leaves which are null pointers and non-other leaves that we might consider. So for example, I said we consider null leaves, but here we have leaves that are null pointers, but not. No pointers. Yeah, so our leaves are usually no pointers, generally. Look at it. We'll have a red-nosed children always be black. That will be a rule. So we're going to have some constraints on how many red nodes we can have. And this is important for the next property, which is where we're getting our worst case imbalance. So we're going to keep us from having too many red nodes, and we're going to count black nodes. And we're going to say that, similar to an ABL tree, that when we look down either side of a path, we're going to have the same number of black nodes. So if we only consider the black nodes, our tree is balanced. And because we make say that you can't have consecutive red nodes, this is effectively going to limit the amount of imbalance we can have to a factor of 2. So the worst we can get is something like this, where on one side we have just black children of black, and the other side we have alternating red and black. So we're getting a worse imbalance than we would allow in the ABL tree case, but we can't get any worse than this. And you're like, well, this is a factor of 2, that's way bigger. And yes, it is, but as far as big O is concerned, this is the same big theta. Because remember, we ignore constant factors in that asymptotic analysis. Yes?
Based on the rules on the previous slide, how do you know when to make a node red?
Question is, how do you know when to make a node red? So I'm going to start going over that next. We're not actually going to cover all the rules for this. But the way we're going to do it, similar to how we made ABL trees be balanced, is we're going to have something we do when we mutate the tree. So with ABL trees, we went over in pretty good detail what those were for insertion. And there's also a bunch of rules you have to follow for removing nodes. And we're going to have something similar here, but instead of making the balance factor be plus or minus 1, we're going to make these properties end up holding. And because we know we have this bound on how imbalanced our tree can be, as long as our properties hold, including this last property about the length and the number of black nodes and paths, as long as we can maintain that with however we do insertion, that's going to be fine. In particular, like with AVL trees, this doesn't say that what we're doing for insertion or deletion is the only thing you could possibly do and still have a red-black tree or an AVL tree. Okay. And so in particular, let's talk about insertion. And this list should give you a hint as to part of why we went over AVL trees first. So in addition to it being a little less direct how it's balanced, we have a whole bunch of cases for insertion, and they're not sort of as similar as they were for AVL trees, where you had two types of rotations and you chose between them. Here we have a bunch of different kinds of operations. So what we're going to do to insert is we're going to first say, I'd really like to insert a red node. And I'd really like to insert a red node because that's not going to change our property about the count. And that seems like the hardest property to satisfy, that if we go down a path, we have the same number of black nodes. And if we can just add a red node that stays the same, there's no problem. And that's certainly the most tricky property to satisfy. So by default, we're going to try to do that. And we're going to have a whole bunch of cases where that doesn't work out. So we have a first case here. If the new node is the root. So this is a very trivial case, but remember we had this rule, this explicit rule, that the root is black. So in that case, we're going to color our inserted node black instead of having it remain red. If the parent is black, we're going to be fine. We can get away with that. So we haven't changed the number of black nodes and paths because we just added a red node somewhere, and everything is fine. So the tricky cases are where our parent node is red, where we've broken our red-black tree property because we have two consecutive red nodes, and we have this rule that we aren't allowed to have red children of a red parent. So we need to do something about it, and we can't just say, let's color the child black, because that might break our count of number of black nodes going from some node to its leaves. That might make that uneven. Probably will make that uneven. So we're going to have several different cases. So one case is when the parent and the uncle, and by uncle, I mean if you go to the grandparent, the other child, or the sibling of the parent, we're going to adjust several colors. There's going to be, in this case, it's going to turn out that we can just swap nodes between red and black, and we'll still satisfy all the properties. So let me show you what that looks like. So here, we've just inserted this node. And here, you might say, why do you have this tree under here? We'll get to that in a second. But let's just say we've just inserted this node N here, and we have its parent, which we'll label P, and its grandparent, which we'll label G, and its uncle, which we'll label U. And this is the situation we have. We inserted our new node. We wanted it to be red because red is the most convenient color for that count property. And its parent and uncle were black, were red. We're going to just make them black, and we're going to make the grandparent red. So this seems fine, but we're missing a bit of a case here. And that is, well, what if we had something here and this was a red node? In that case, we have a problem. So after we swap those colors, we're going to hope that we had a black node up there, not a red one. But if we didn't, we're going to have to do even more work. We're not done yet. And what we're going to do is we're going to pretend that this grandparent node up here was just inserted. And we're going to look through all the cases for it. So we're going to go back to our list here. We're going to say, is its parent and uncle red? If so, we're going to do this color swapping thing again. If its parent is red and its uncle is black and it's the right child, we're going to do case 4 and so on. So we're going to have this, when you implement this most naturally, you have this recursive function where after you're done changing those colors, you check to see if grandparents, great-grandparent is red, and then you do a recursive call to the I just inserted a node, fix up all the colors method. And that's why this picture here and the ones we'll show have this trees 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 underneath that we preserve, because we need to handle this case where we do this recursively, even though we are going to be inserting generally on leaves. So any questions about this? Thanks. So this is a case where all we're doing is bookkeeping. That it turned out that we could maintain all our properties as far as node counts without changing the structure of our tree. We just changed this extra bit of data we stored about whether nodes were red and black, and we could still satisfy the properties. But that's obviously not always going to be the case, because otherwise, this wouldn't be a balanced tree. If we don't actually shuffle the structure of the tree some way that's not like a binary search tree, what are we wasting our time doing? So we have our next case, which is, let's say our parent is red and our uncle is black and the new node is the right child. So we're going to use our rules and we're going to distinguish, to make things, I think, actually simpler, though it may not seem so, between right and left child, so we do less kinds of rotations. So in this case, we've inserted a new node, and its parent is red, but its uncle is black. So we can't do our color shuffling, we can't swap the parent, uncle, and grandparent colors, because there's not, the parent and uncle aren't the same to swap with the grandparent. So we can't do that and preserve our count of black nodes. So the reason in case three the swapping worked is because this didn't change how many black nodes going down a path. We just, every path which had the grandparent as a black node now has the parent or the uncle as a black node when we do this swap. That's why that was fine. But in this case, we can't really do anything because the paths here have an extra black node and the ones here don't. And if we try to make the grandparent red and the parent black, that's not gonna, that's gonna change things. Change the number of black nodes down the uncle side paths. So we're gonna do this in two steps. So first, we're going to go to a different case. We're gonna swap our, do a rotation to make our new node be the parent. And you notice that we're still in a bad case here because we still have two consecutive red nodes, which I told you was one of the rules that we didn't allow. But this is now case five, except we pretend that our new node is what was previously the parent and not the original node. So if you remember, case five is left child. So we just swap the side of things to have the imbalanced case where things are on the left side to make the next case similar, and then we're going to perform a rotation. So we have our fifth case where our parent is red, our uncle is black, and the new node is the left child. And here we're going to take, we have our new node, where in case four this is actually our previous parent. And it's in this position, it's the second of a two consecutive reds. And we're going to take its parent and make it go into the place of its grandparent, do this rotation. So here we're finally doing something to fix the tree being imbalanced, that we think we have too many red nodes on the left side, so we're going to move one of the red nodes to the right side to make the tree more balanced. So now we have a more even number of red nodes on either side, and that sort of, that's helps, that's going to get us closer to that actual balance property and keep us within that factor of two in balance by satisfying our rule we don't have consecutive red nodes. And since we're just moving around a red node here, we aren't changing the number of black nodes on paths. Because our rotation is just basically involves moving a red node around. Notice that after we do this, we do swap the colors of the parent and grandparent. Too, because other, if we didn't do that, we'd end up here, we'd still have the parent next to the new node. And those would be two consecutive reds, but after we do this rotation, we know that we can safely swap these colors, and if we look at the paths beforehand and the paths after, well, if we had a path with two blacks from grandparent to uncle, that path now goes through the parent, then grandparent, then uncle, so it still has the same number of black nodes. If we had a path from grandparent to through the new node, that goes through the parent now, so it has a black node on it that substitutes for the grandparent. So we still preserved the number of black nodes on every path, and if we were actually like proving this formally, which someone had to do, make sure it works, we'd show that for all these cases. We'd say, well, let's look at every path that goes through these nodes we changed the colors of. What's the new path? How many black nodes that were changed are on it versus before? But if we iterate through all these cases, we still preserve that property. And because we swap these colors, we still preserve the property that we don't have two consecutive red nodes anymore. So, any questions about any of these cases? What we're doing, why we're doing it? Yeah.
So, when inserting a value into the red-black tree, should we consider all this, like, cases?
Do we consider, the question is, do we consider all these cases? We do these in order, but yes, we have to handle, you have to, the implementation has to handle all these cases. Note that we have some pretty quick shortcuts, like parent is black, we're done very quickly. And just to go through it, let's go through an example of sort of a complicated case of this. So here I have a red-black tree. And the leaves are black, so you might say, no they aren't. You have this. Remember that we consider our null children the leaves, that we don't, that I usually don't show on diagrams. So the leaves are black, we just have null children of these, everything. All red nodes children are black. That is actually true. We have the same number of black nodes down every path to from every node to its leaves. And that is true. We start here, we go 1, 2, 3, 2. We have one black node from this side, one black node from the other side. So this is actually a red-black tree. All its properties are satisfied. So we're going to do an insertion. An insertion that's going to involve several of these cases. So we're going to insert 8. And remember, our rule is we don't want to change the number of black nodes and paths, so we're going to initially make this new node red. So I'm inserting 8, I'm just doing my standard binary search tree thing, and I end up down here. And I have 2 consecutive red nodes, so I have a problem. I'm going to need to fix this. We need to do something. And here we're in case 3. We have the parent and the uncle are red. So our initial idea for fixing this is going to be that we're going to swap the colors of 3 and 1 and 5. So every path that got a black node through 3 is either going to have 1 be that black node or 5 be that black node when we're going to a leaf. So we're going to preserve our property about the counts of black nodes on paths. So let's try that. I'm going to swap those colors, and this is what we end up with. And remember, the last part of case 3 is that we might have to do this recursive thing where we look at, well, okay, so we just changed this node, and now I need to figure out what happened. So I inserted 8, I swapped the colors of 1, 5, and 3 to make sure I didn't have 2 consecutive red nodes after I did that. But now 10 and 3, they are consecutive red nodes, and we need to fix that. So we pretend that we just inserted 3, ignore mostly the things under it, and say, well, which case are we in? And if we look through our list of cases, we can say it's not the root, the parent, its parent isn't black, its uncle is not red. It's black, so we aren't in case 3 again, which we could have been. And it is the left child. So we're in case 4. And what we end up doing in that case is we do a bunch of rotations. More swaps, so we do our operations for case 4 from there. And this is how we end up with a balanced tree. So we move 10 up to the top with 3 still as its child, and we swap the colors of 10 and 100 in order to preserve the situation. Is this actually case 5? Did I not read? Yes, this is actually case 5. Okay. That is a consistency problem of bipart. This is case 5. Sorry, so this is case 5, not 4, which is why it's just a rotation and not a rotation followed by another rotation. I described the case correctly and just numbered it. So we're doing that rotation and color swapping in order to preserve this. So this is the sort of thing that might happen when we do an insertion. So this seems like we can do a lot of work for a single insertion, but note that we're doing work, you know, going up the tree, so the amount of operations we're doing is order log n. It's proportional to the depth of the tree, and the maximum depth is, you know, 2 times log n, log base 2 basic event, basically, because we have that maximum 2x imbalance from the red-black tree properties. So I hope I drew this correctly.
It looks like we've just performed one right rotation.
Yes. Yeah, this is case 5. So
we're not doing right rotation of parent and grandparent?
We're doing that of the parent with parent swapping with the grandparent. Sorry, that's it's a.
One rotation of the two together.
Yeah, the two together. So yeah. So what I mean by the parent and grandparent here is that we're taking the parent and grandparent as a unit and rotating them. Conceptually, maybe this wasn't quite how you described rotations, which is fine. So you might say it's a rotation of the. Right rotation of the grandparent or the parent or something like that. I just prefer drawing pictures to make it clear what I actually mean for cases like this, or specifying where nodes what node ends up to be a child of what. Yeah, so I mean the tree including the parent and the grandparent. Emphasizing that the parent gets moved, even though I could just say the grandparent tree, the subtree at the grandparent. Other questions about what's going on here? Okay, so that's what red-black tree insertion is. So red-black tree removal is a lot more complicated. So you do a normal binary search tree remove. Then you find the next highest or lowest node. So you have a node with at most one child. You know that this happens because you're guaranteed to, if you have a node that you're removing that has some children, you know that somewhere in this subtree, if we go to the most left or most right, we're going to get something with at most one child. When we go to the next highest or lowest value. Because it's either going to be a leaf or it's going to be a node like here where, say, it's a right child of something which has a left child. So you do that, you swap the two nodes, which we can do based on the fact that they're consecutive values, so they can occupy the same space in the tree. You know, if we compress the two values together. And then, so that's the first step of the removal, is to swap the nodes so we're conceptually removing a node with one child all the time, because we don't want to deal with the complication of removing a node with two children. And then we have a whole bunch of cases for so we're removing x, and the way we're going to remove x is we're going to make x be one of these nodes. So we're going to swap x and y, and then we're going to remove down here. So
this is the regular BST removal.
Yeah.
We haven't done it yet.
We haven't done it yet. So we start with the regular BST removal. We figure out what we're removing, but rather than removing anything with two children, we're going to swap a node, swap values in later. So another way you can think about it is that if we want to remove x here, that I'm going to say I don't want to remove this node with two children, so I'm going to find this candidate node y here, And what I'm going to have, where is my pointer? Okay. And I'm going to make y be up where x is. And now I have two y's. That's a problem. And so I'm actually going to get rid of this extra y. And that's what we're doing. Yeah, so yeah, sorry. So we start with the node finding part. So we do the search for what node we're going to remove part of a VST removal. But instead of dealing with removing a top node, we have this special case where for nodes with two children, it might be a common case. In order to have us only remove nodes with one children. So even after we do that work, yes, question?
Yeah, what does highest slash lowest mean?
Next highest lowest value, key value. So like in this tree, the next highest value after 3 is 5. And the lowest next lowest value after 3 is 1. So here, if you're removing 3, we'd either swap 3 and 5, or 3 and 1.
It doesn't matter which one you choose?
It doesn't matter, yeah. But the rule, we don't want to deal with the case where we have a node with two children for our removal cases. Because even after we do that, we have 6 different cases to implement. Each of which is going to have, like we have with insertion, a bit of a different thing to do. And we're not going to actually go through what these are. So we have a case where n is the new root, where we need to make sure it's black or else we're in trouble. We have a case where s is red, where its sibling is red, which is probably easier because remember that we have to worry about black nodes counts. And then we have to worry about all these different combinations of colors. And like we did with insertion, we're going to have some operation we do here. You can look it up in something like the Wikipedia article or an algorithms textbook if you want the full details. But basically, we're going to choose some operation and we're going to show that after we do that, all the properties of that make it a red-black tree are satisfied. And that's going to be enough to show that we still have a balanced tree. But it turns out that the efficient way people know of doing this, it has a lot of cases. And if you're implementing this, you're going to have to like debug all of them. Because if you get any of them wrong, suddenly your tree doesn't work correctly. Or it becomes very slow because it's not actually a balanced tree. And you've broken the red-black tree properties. And you do the right insertions and deletions. And it just gets like a linked list. So this is a lot more complicated than for an AVL tree. We didn't go over AVL tree deletion, but it's not as bad as this. So any questions about this general idea of what we're doing for both insertion and deletion in red-black trees? So, why would we do this? Why do we want to implement trees like this rather than AVL trees? So there's a lot more cases to implement, and red-black trees are typically considered more difficult to implement. But if you look at libraries, it's much more common to find that when you're using something which provides you a balanced tree some way, that it's a red-black tree. So for example, in the C++ standard library, there's a standard collections called map and set. And the most common implementation of these, it might vary, but the most common implementation of both of these is a red-black tree and not an AVL tree. And this is not because they're being lazy, obviously. If they were being lazy, they'd probably implement a red-black tree, or there's actually some even simpler kinds of trees, balanced trees, to implement. It's because that they think it is more efficient to implement a red-black tree. And you might say, wait a moment, but your red-black trees, they can look like this. That's a lot worse than our AVL trees ever look. And like this is the case with only this much depth it can get. If I had twice as many, well, if I had twice as deep, it would have a 2x factor. We can have a lot more levels we recurse down, and that is true. But we're going to do a lot less rotations, and those rotations end up being expensive. All those maintenance operations to keep the tree balanced ends up not being worth it in practice. Asymptotically, these trees are the same. Like if you look at what's the performance of find, insert, etc., it's all big theta of log n for all these trees. But in practice, red-black trees end up being faster because we do less operations to maintain the balance of the tree because we're more tolerant of imbalance. And that 2x factor, yeah, it's a 2x factor, but it ends up not being significant for almost all applications. So any questions on this idea? So this means if you look at an actual library for that implements balanced trees that's meant for production code, red-black trees for in-memory trees are by far the most common choice. So there's other kinds of balanced trees, as I mentioned. So one other notable kind of balanced trees that I'd like to talk briefly about are non-binary ones. So we've just seen binary search trees. And you can do non-binary search trees. So what does that mean? That means you have a node, say 10, and you have children that are in order. So now we don't know exactly where 10 fits in between, but at least we know that we have like 3, 7, and 14 or something like that. But the nodes are still in order. You still get this property that you can search this efficiently if you order it such that you know that all the children of 3 are on the right side of that, if that all the children of 3 are less than 7, for example. If you know that, you can still search this. We're not going to go into detail about this, but I'd like you to know that they exist and not be surprised when you hear about them. The most common application for these are databases. And the reason they're really attractive for databases is that, databases don't store things in memory. In memory, when we follow a pointer, the most efficient thing to do is to get one value. Memory is really good at getting particular values at one memory location. When we have something on disk and you want to get something, the most efficient thing to do is to get a whole bunch of values at once. So these style of trees where we store multiple children together, we're going to just get all the children all at once, and that's typically why in a database you want to use this, because you're going to want to store this whole list of children and figure out as you search, rather than just getting two values to look at. So if you think about databases, they're the same thing. The concepts are basically the same. Obviously, searching is more complicated because we have to have rules about when do we look down which child, what's the comparison we do, and there's different rule variations you can have for that. But this is an extension of balanced trees that works better for a different kind of storage. So in memory, we don't actually want to go through this linear search on every node, but on disk, if you have to read, as is often the case, 4 kilobytes anyways, you want to have actually 4 kilobytes of keys to read, not just 16 bytes or something like that. So there's one more kind of tree, balanced tree we'll talk about, which is kind of a strange case. So there's something called splay trees. And splay trees are attractive for practical applications because they leave recent nodes near the top. So if you have this access pattern where you're looking at things you've looked at previously, splay trees are often faster in practice than balanced trees. Also, they happen to be simpler to implement than AVL or red-black trees by most reports. They have less rules, they're actually more straightforward to implement, and they're really good when you have, you know, you access things repeatedly, which is many real applications. You look at, you know, how you find things, you often find the same thing over and over again. Splay trees just naturally keep those near the top. And the basic idea is that every time you access a node, so we're going to do something not just on insertion and deletion, but even when you're just finding a node. And we have to do this because the property needs to be recent nodes are near the top. I didn't say recently inserted nodes. I said recent nodes. So that means all nodes. So whenever we access a node in any way, we're going to do what is called splay the tree around the node. And that means we're going to do some rotations in order to make that new node the new root of the tree. So by near the top, like, we have this stronger property that the thing we just accessed is the top of the tree every time. And because we're doing rotations to get it there, if something was accessed just before that, it's going to be one of the children, and so on. And that's how we got this property that recently accessed nodes are near the top. So we still need to implement rotations, and we're doing a lot of rotations, but this is going to be beneficial if we have that repeated accesses. Yes?
If the splay tree is a binary tree, then what is the difference between the left child and right child?
So the question, if the splay tree is a binary tree, what's the difference between left and right child? It's still a binary search tree. And we still follow the rules for a binary search tree. We just are rotating the tree to make things the top. So in the AVL tree, we rotated things to make the balance factors work. Here, we're rotating the tree to make the new recent nodes be on top. This is a different property, and doing these rotations might end up making our tree less balanced. So for example, if our splay tree looks like this and we insert 4, the right thing to do is put 4 at the top. That is less balanced than if you did the naive binary search tree thing. But that's the right thing to do because our rule is new nodes are at the newest, the access node is at the root. But it's still a binary search tree. We can still follow the binary search tree rules as far as how we find a node, where we insert or find a node. We just have some extra operation where we move that node back up to the top after we do that. So splaying, just like our general rotations, we're doing a bunch of rotations, so we have time proportional to the height of the tree. So this might make your warning bells go off. Like, wait a moment, you know, we did all this balanced tree stuff in order to get good asymptotic behavior, and we talked all about how we want guarantees that things won't blow up, that we won't end up doing a linear search. We were worried that with binary search trees that we typically ended up with, in this case where, you know, we sometimes end up in this case where we just had a linked list. Isn't that going to happen for your splay tree? Aren't you sometimes going to get some access pattern where it's really, really bad? And splay trees conveniently have this guarantee. They have something, notice, where we can say they have amortized log time. So they don't really have log n time for every operation, because sometimes we're going to have a linked list. Find one, from here, well, that's going to be a linked list. And this can happen. We can construct access patterns where this is arbitrarily bad for any single find or insert operation, where we have a linked list, we're just going down. But you can show, and we're not going to do the analysis, if you take, when you take algorithms, presumably they'll cover how you do this kind of analysis, but you can show that in some sense, the average time for insert, find, or delete is going to be big O of log n, where n is the maximum size of the tree, maximum number of nodes. And more formally, the way you'll show this is that you'll say that if you're doing m operations, it takes big O of m log n time, where n is the maximum size of the tree, assuming you start from an empty tree. So you do some number of insertions, finds, inserts in some order, starting from an empty tree, so you have to do all the insertions you need to do to get the tree non-empty. If you average the time to do that, the average time for each of those operations is going to be bounded by log n. And of course, it can be better in the case where you have this locality and you're always just looking at like the top two nodes. So this is what you can show formally about splay trees, which is why they're really attractive, why they're, you know, not going to make your application blow up. So as long as you only care about the average time for operations and not that is this particular find really slow, which is in many real applications, you have just a big list of things you need to process, splay trees can be way nicer. Okay, so yeah, so that's splay trees. So they're often faster than AVL and Reblack trees. And if you're implementing trees yourself, and you know you have this kind of access pattern where you care about recently accessed things, and typically this occurs when you have some list like of humans like requesting things, like if you're requesting, looking at a web page, you're likely to look at related things close in time. Look at it again, if you have that sort of pattern where you have some reason to believe there's a natural recurrence of accesses, then they're often faster and they're simpler to implement. Yes, you still have to do your rotations, but you just do a fixed set of rotations to get things to the top. But the disadvantage is that if you're worried about that worst case, is yes, you have some guarantee it's not going to happen too often, and we can make that very formally that it's not going to happen too often, but sometimes you're going to have something that takes theta n time. Okay. And that's what I have for today, so next time we'll pick up with a bit more amortized complexity and probably starting talking about hashes.